Digging Deeper Without the Coalface, the podcast that shares the incredible stories of the talented and passionate people in our industry who not only shine on site but are doing incredible things in their local communities, on the national stage, and sometimes even making a global impact. We often interview people and would love to share the whole story with you. So here it is, this episode of Digging Deeper Without the Coalface, thanks to Australian and family-owned business Expressway Spares, proudly celebrating 60 years of supplying Hitachi and Caterpillar components to the mining industry, and your host, Jessica Rouse.
Welcome to Digging Deeper. The first couple of episodes have been released all about our wonderful coal industry, and the love of coal continues this episode with Coal Australia. I'm sure you've seen this around. If you've ever picked up a copy of our magazine or even just jumped on social media, you might have seen some caps and shirts and things popping up in the workplace as well. The not-for-profit started in 2023 to advocate and tell everyone how great the coal industry is. Stuart Bocking was appointed to the role of CEO of Coal Australia at the end of last year, and he joins us for this episode. Stuart, thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much, Jess. Great to be with you.
Now, I've noticed in your newsletter that comes out every week, is it from Coal Australia, you've been travelling around to a few mine sites. Where have you been lately?
Yeah, well, just recently visiting one of our terrific members, Q Metco's mine in Queensland, the Foxley mine, which is about 300 k's northwest of Rockhampton, an open cut pit there with metallurgical coal. And it was terrific to be able to catch up with the mine manager, the head of Q Metco, and a number of other staff who are involved with that mine. It's a terrific operation. Got a very good outlook for well beyond another decade or so. So always great to be able to get out and about, visit some of the member assets that are a part of the Coal Australia fleet, so to speak, and it was terrific.
Oh, fantastic. It is great to see you getting out and visiting those mine sites and all of the garnering that attention, I guess, for what Coal Australia is wanting to achieve and wanting to do. You came on board towards the end of last year. Tell me about your experience in the industry. You've dabbled in a few different aspects of it.
Well, that's right. So originally, obviously, I had a long career in the media, and from that, I got into politics, working in the previous Liberal National Government in New South Wales. Ultimately ended up as the resources advisor to two deputy premiers between 2019 and 2023. From there, I parlayed that into a law career, working for a firm based in Sydney, where a number of the clients that I'd had were from the resources sector and was primarily working around projects and planning approvals for those projects. And from that, the opportunity came up to join Coal Australia, and I thought, fantastic, what better way could I be using all of those skills to advocate on behalf of what are fantastic communities, a terrific sector, great people. And it's almost as if I've spent the last 30 years, you know, sort of rehearsing and preparing for this role, because it brings together all of the skills that I've garnered over many years to advocate for what is a fantastic sector and terrific communities being coal mining.
Mm, exactly. Now, obviously, everyone has a different opinion on the coal mining industry. We, of course, concur with Coal Australia and absolutely love it. And in doing a bit of research, you know, on people's opinions of coal and the industry in general, I came across something that happened in Parliament about 8 or 9 years ago now that I'd almost forgotten. It was probably when I was still at university. It was Scott Morrison. He took that lump of coal into Parliament. If you don't quite remember what I'm talking about, this might jog your memory.
It's coal that has ensured for over 100 years
the Deputy Prime Minister
has enjoyed an energy competitive advantage that has delivered prosperity for Australian businesses and has ensured that Australian industry has been able to remain competitive on a global market. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, those opposite have an ideological, pathological fear of coal.
I don't know if we'd see a politician doing that today, but do you still think there is that really strong fear of coal around?
Look, I don't know that it's fear necessarily. I think clearly there are some ideological positions that people have taken that are anti-coal. I think the key message the former Prime Minister was trying to get across at the time was that this is a prosperous sector. There are a lot of men and women, some of those whom I met recently on the trip to Foxley, who are not just first or second generation, but in some cases third and fourth generation members of coal mining families and communities. And they have prospered from that, just as our export revenues, just as our electricity grid, just as our national economy has prospered from what is coal mining. So I think the general sentiment that was being echoed by the former Prime Minister is as relevant today as it was back then. And that is about, you know, get across and away from some ideological view. I would say to many of the Teals and Greens, if they actually got out among some of these communities, like, say, a Middlemount in central Queensland, where I was last week, and they spoke to the men and women who rely on this sector and who've moved around and have only known work in this sector, I think they would form a very different view. And that's certainly, to me, one of the key things about what we do at Coal Australia. Part of that weekly newsletter is obviously to share what we've been up to as a member-based body, but also to grow that grassroots support for coal mining communities and what those communities do, frankly, for the nation. You know, you think about the various properties of coal, whether it be its contribution to the heavy lifting in the electricity grid, obviously its massive contribution as an export earner for both thermal and met coal, and then, of course, the important role that met coal plays more prominently in steel manufacturing. So it's a multifaceted commodity that is easily demonised by Greens and Teals and some others who, frankly, need to get out of some of their inner city enclaves and speak to some of the people like I did last week in Middlemount. I do think they would have a very different view.
Exactly. It's that understanding, isn't it? I always remember there was one of the mine sites down here had members of Lock the Gate come out. They invited them out to site. Surprisingly, they did show up and they said to me that their whole perception of what they thought the coal mine to be completely changed from that visit, from just that little bit of understanding, that seeing what actually happens on the ground.
Well, I think it's interesting as well. And I mean, we've seen a shift even with Lock the Gate, because now there's a whole heap of farming communities and others in regional areas who are coming under all sorts of pressure from renewable energy companies and other groups representing those companies, who basically just want to traipse across the land with little to no consultation, all in the name supposedly of the greater good and the rolling out of these renewables projects, the connections of transmission lines with very little consultation with regional landholders. And so suddenly, you know, Lock the Gate, which sprung up in part over coal seam gas many, many years ago, now suddenly seem to be dealing with many of the same sorts of concerns, but with renewables projects as opposed to extractive industries many years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And it'd be remiss of us not to talk about transition, obviously, that T word that is thrown around quite a lot, and the fact that we will need some sort of baseload power from coal. You know, obviously those renewables, as we move ahead, will become a part of the mix, but they will simply just be part of the mix.
Well, look, the reality is, and there'll be times where, you know, some types are all abuzz at the fact that renewables have powered the grid for this period of time or that period of time. What is clear is where there is the baseload demand and the heavy lifting, particularly between, say, 4 in the afternoon and 11 o'clock at night, coal is still a massive part of that mix. And we are kidding ourselves if we think a battery or some form of firming capacity through batteries is going to be able to do the job when supposedly the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't blow. The reality is winds do tend to calm down overnight. There are only very few areas, perhaps in the desert, where conditions can get windier at night than they do in the day. So that's sort of the double whammy as far as renewables are concerned, that overnight is where they are least active and least able to generate electricity. And that's where coal still is absolutely critical. And what I would say is, okay, yes, let's move down the path of renewables if that's where there's a general view we should go, but let's do it at a pace that works for us. Let's do it at a pace that is economically responsible. And somehow trying to pretend that we can wish away the coal sector tomorrow is just, frankly, economically irresponsible. Because even if we were to end our demand for thermal coal tomorrow domestically, there is still an enormous demand from very advanced nations like South Korea, Japan, developing ones like Vietnam and India that are very populous, that are still demanding quality Australian thermal coal. And so the demand is there for many years to come. I'm talking to member companies who are looking at extensions to existing operations beyond 2040.
Mm.
Now, they're risking shareholder money. It's all well and good for Greens types to do back of the envelope calculations and say, oh, well, you know, it's unsustainable, it's economically unviable, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's the member companies of Coal Australia that are risking shareholder capital, that are risking their own investment dollars in saying, well, hang on, our information is telling us that demand for met coal remains strong, that demand for thermal coal remains strong, whether it's here or other near neighbours of Australians. So why would we not be continuing to satisfy that demand when it's still there? There is a market to be serviced, and better servicing it with quality, clean Australian coal than some other inferior product that would ultimately be sourced from some other jurisdiction.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's always a great perspective to see the numbers when you look at our emissions and that sort of thing. I was at a Ausmine conference not long ago, and Cam Halfpenny from Bengalla did the keynote speech, and he obviously talked about Bengalla and his role at the mine and that sort of thing. But also he talked about, you know, how important the coal mining industry is in perspective to the rest of the world. You know, A, our coal is amazing, and B, the emissions that we actually emit as a country are quite tiny compared to other countries, something like 1%.
Well, and this is one of the key things. Now, that's not to say, obviously, we don't do our part, and that's all well and good. But I think, importantly, the very valid point that Cam is making, and obviously Bengalla owned by New Hope, which is one of the great Coal Australia members, that the key point is that we need to be conscious of going down this renewables path at a pace that works for us economically.
Mm.
What do you say to someone who's earning $150,000 in central Queensland that suddenly, we just don't think your job is worthwhile anymore? We just don't think it's worthy enough. Who is anyone to say that when in many of those cases they might be second or third generation or longer? What we know with coal is there is a lived prosperity that has come from coal. Renewables can't make the same claim. And at the moment, you've got renewables backers. Many of them are foreign-owned multinationals who are getting involved in this because there are huge licks of taxpayer subsidies being put forward by the federal government. Many of those taxpayer subsidies, ironically, have been funded by the coal sector, whether it be through royalties or corporate taxes or GST paid by those employees of coal mines. So it's laughable, frankly, to suggest that somehow we would sell out coal mining tomorrow based on a whim and a prayer with the renewable sector, when at the moment, if it wasn't for the fact that there were billions of dollars on offer of taxpayers' money, how many of these foreign-owned multinationals who are part of the renewable sector would want to get involved?
Mm. Exactly. And you mentioned that some of your member companies are looking ahead for extensions and approvals for those extensions. Obviously, planning approvals is a big topic of conversation heading into a federal election, but both the QRC and the New South Wales Minerals Council have been urging governments for a long time to streamline the process, because it seems when a mine goes to apply for an extension, the goalpost just gets moved and they're doing, you know, the same thing for state and federal. It's just insane.
Well, and that's why I think we've got to be very careful coming into this federal election. You know, the compact from Coal Australia is very simple. You support coal mining communities, you support coal, then Coal Australia supports you. But it's not enough to simply talk tough on the ground, but then in a party room meeting, have very little to say. Now, Now, clearly, some of the things that have been talked about by federal Labor, such as a Commonwealth EPA, nature positive legislation and this type of thing, would only alter the goalposts even further, would only make resources and coal mining approvals even more difficult. If someone can tell me that a Queensland EPA or an EPA in New South Wales is somehow giving coal mines a free ride or a green pass or anything else, then they haven't dealt with those sorts of regulatory and compliance bodies. The fact is, they are very robust bodies. So the idea that we would then duplicate that as a, at a Commonwealth level is frankly self-defeating and utterly ridiculous. The idea that you've now got to jump through hoops on an EPBC Act, do further ecological surveys. If you were coming back in another lifetime, you'd come back as an ecologist. You will never be short of work. The amount of ecological surveys that have got to be done now by these proponents just to, in some cases, prove that certain species aren't there at certain times of the year is quite extraordinary. And having satisfied state authorities that you are worthy of being granted an approval, you've then got to often jump through similar hoops at a Commonwealth level to prove in some cases similar things, in others then a matter of national significance pops up and you've got to prove or disprove those one way or the other. This is all time, money and expense that frankly we should be able to circumvent. A, there needs to be a streamlining, but B, even more importantly, we shouldn't be adding to the headaches, adding to the complications, putting new hurdles in front of these projects, because ultimately that is good for no one. And when you look at the figures from the International Energy Agency, global coal consumption was up last year. So demand remains strong. We've got quality Australian coal here in this country. Why we would say, oh, well, we should make it difficult to be able to service that demand is clearly self-defeating, counterproductive, and goes against what is economically responsible at a time when all of our member companies are doing what they can to reduce their emissions. But importantly as well, if you've got to burn half the thermal coal to generate electricity in Japan or South Korea than say you might have to do if you were using Indonesian coal, then that's good for those countries who are reliant on thermal coal and perhaps don't have the same capacity for renewables that some other countries might have. Are we going to deny them that coal? Is anyone suggesting, Jess, that somehow Japan is a backward nation? And yet they remain the largest demander of New South Wales thermal coal anywhere around the world.
Exactly. And it's not just that frustration for the companies. It's those small communities where the mine is literally that source of employment. It's putting money into the community for little community projects and things that, you know, just wouldn't happen otherwise. So that uncertainty to be waiting or, you know, thinking, oh my goodness, am I going to have a job next year if this mine doesn't get approved? That's a huge amount of stress as well on the community.
Well, it certainly is. And if we're talking about, you know, some sort of transition towards renewables, let's not kid ourselves here. I mean, at Foxley the other day, you've got anywhere up to 600 employees who are working 7 days on, 7 days off, 12 and a half hour days when they're there for those 7 days. Now, are you telling me that if suddenly you shut these mines down tomorrow, that some wind farm or some solar farm is going to be employing all of those people on swing shifts around the clock, 7 days a week, 363 days a year? You're going to have someone to squeegee the solar panel, a contractor undoubtedly to fix the turbine on a wind farm when that breaks down. And beyond that, you might have a third person to shoo the black snakes away.
Yeah.
And they will not be earning $150,000 a year. The same sort of employment and at the same sort of income levels, then frankly, they are just not being honest with you.
Exactly. Now let's talk about Coal Australia. Obviously, it's been doing very well. I think, is it more than 50,000 people have signed up to, you know, get those newsletters and be a part of the Coal Australia community?
That's right. And look, that's one of the key things I wanted to do with the newsletter when I came on board is to have that regular contact, not just with our member companies and their employees so they know what we've been doing with their members' money, because ultimately we are set up by them, for them, and to advocate on their behalf. But also a big part of that is trying to shift the narrative in support of coal. All of our members are unashamedly pure coal players, and we are here to represent their interests, to highlight the importance of coal, the impact it has on so many of these communities that frankly would not exist if it wasn't for coal mining operations in and around the place. You dread to imagine what a middle mount might look like if it wasn't for the fact that there are a number of coal mines in that precinct. So it's absolutely critical. The newsletter is a great way of building on that support. And obviously, we're encouraging associate members to join Coal Australia as well. So these aren't, we're not just about the producer companies, as important, obviously, as they are, but a whole heap of other companies that play a critical role in the supply chain and the logistics involved with coal to say, look, we want to be able to represent you as well. So we offer various tiers of associate membership, as well as the full membership we offer to our producer members. And then, of course, there's the grassroots part of the organisation, which at this point has ticked over 50,000 friends of coal who get the newsletter each week. Now, of course, some of them might all be friends of coal. There might be a few antis among them wondering what the so-called enemy's up to, but I'm happy to share that detail as well. You know, one person at a time, if we can sort of help educate or fill in a few more details to just highlight how important this sector is, how vibrant this sector is, to tell some of the fantastic stories of the average men and women who just quietly go about their business, that is critical. Because ultimately, unlike the renewables carpet strollers who go with their begging bowls to Canberra, when I go to Canberra, I'm not asking for huge licks of money for a project or a program. When I go to Canberra, I'm simply saying on behalf of our members, we want sensible policy settings that don't unduly create duplication or further obstacles, to simply allow us to get on and employ thousands of people in very well-paid jobs and pay boatloads of money in taxes to both state and federal governments. Is that too much to ask, Jess?
Exactly. We couldn't agree with you more. And you do it in such a people-friendly way. I mean, everything you've just said just now, you know, through how you reach out to the people who become friends of coal, the merch, it's just very people-friendly.
And look, the merch has been fantastic. It's a point of difference. It's quirky. People love it, whether we built this city on rocks and coal T-shirts, whether it's those bumper stickers, whether it's just the Coal Australia stickers, whether it's the aprons, the thongs, the caps, the shirts, you name it. People love it. And part of the value of either associate membership or membership of Coal Australia is you get an allotment of the merch for your employees. And companies just can't get enough of it. Associate members who join up just can't get enough of it. They just love it. And obviously people can purchase it through our shop as well. So the merch has been fantastic. So I'm not sure if you've managed to get yourself any yet, Jess, but certainly happy to help out where possible.
I was going to say, I've got my cap, I've got my shirt, but I've made the joke to you before, I keep missing out on a mug, and that's really all I want.
Right. Well, look, we'll make you our number one mug holder, okay?
Done.
Just like we have ticket holders with football clubs, rugby league and AFL team. You can be our number one mug holder. We'll sort that out for you, okay?
I love it. Legend. Stuart, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. And of course, if anyone wants to find out more about Coal Australia, head to the website and your socials.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Jess.
Well, thank you for joining us for this episode of Digging Deeper with At The Coalface. You can download more episodes of the podcast on all your favourite podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, also on YouTube, Amazon Music, all the usual places. Make sure you leave us a rating and a review. We'd love to hear what you thought. And if you do have a story idea or something you'd like us to talk about on the podcast, please send me an email, jess@thecoalface.net.au. I'd love to hear from you. And we'll be back next time for another episode of Digging Deeper with At The Coalface.